This is Icon Art Radio with Alan Cobb, Donna Colby, and Bill Teeple. That's me. Before we get started today, I want to mention that on our website, the Icon website, which is www.icon-art.org, icon-art.org, but that's a hyphen, remember. You will find a playlist for all of our radio shows, and Alan's going to tell you the technical intricacies of making it work.
Well, fortunately,
it's very simple, yeah. As I understand. It's very simple, only for some reason my computer is debilitated and won't do it, but everybody else's in the world seems to work.
Fortunately, yeah, it's actually entirely obvious what to do. on the main webpage for Icon Art, and you're right, that is a hyphen, but I defy anyone to find a dash on a keyboard. So it can serve as a hyphen or a dash. Or a minus. Basically, there's a picture of Bill and Donna and myself down on the lower left side of the home page. You can't miss it. I think it's the only picture. And just click on the picture, and it takes you to a page with a little bit of explanatory information at the top, which you can ignore, and then a list of radio programs by topic and original air date. And just click on any one of those radio shows and it'll start playing. If you would rather download the radio show so that you can copy it onto your music player, iPod or cell phone or whatever, then you can right click on the show, and one of the choices you get in that little pop-up menu is to download it. And then it goes through your normal download dialog box where it asks you where you want to save it to and so forth. On the off chance that your computer doesn't have the incredibly ubiquitous Adobe Flash Player already installed, then you would want to read the little paragraphs at the beginning of that page, because one of them has an underlined link in it leading to the install page on Adobe's website so that you can get Flash installed on your computer immediately. If for some reason even that is not working or inconvenient, there's another link in the introductory paragraphs that will take you to another page with a completely different list. It looks different, it's a list of the same programs. And that list has a little speaker next to each program, and if you click on that using any browser other than Internet Explorer, it'll start playing in a minute or so. If you click on it with Internet Explorer, it will probably try to download the entire program and then start playing it, so I don't recommend doing that. And in that case, the best thing is to click on an adjacent link that's just the name of the file, and that can be downloaded. But this is getting a little too complicated to explain on a radio program.
When they first get the page up and they have Flash installed,
they'll just see a list of all the programs.
And do they need to be to access it through Internet Explorer for that to work, or does it matter?
It works with any browser. Anybody on a Mac or a PC will see the list, and there's a little scroll button at the top and bottom of the list, so you can see all 61 at this point shows. Clicking on a show starts it, and there's a little play button at the top, and there's a little skip to the next one or the previous one button, and a little volume control button. So just click around and see how it works. It's really quite simple and elegant. It's a little list playing tool from Yahoo, I think.
So this is great. We've been looking forward to this for some time now.
Yes, it's been it's
KRUU
long overdue.
Has been wanting to archive things, but there's because of copyright considerations they haven't.
Yeah,
theoretically,
all the shows on KRUU should be accessible this way, but since most of the shows play copyrighted music during the day, they can't make it possible for you to download all the music they're playing, because that would be violating copyright. but there's nothing copyrighted on Icon Art Radio. Nothing at all.
So
even the theme song, you're free to use it in any way you see fit, if you can stand to hear it one more time.
Right, maybe somebody will do a remix, dance.
Yeah, I should do a new
around
theme
the
song
art theme song. Well, we're very happy about this. So click and enjoy, because not everyone can listen to us at 8 in the morning.
Right.
The last show we had was very interesting. Donna just brought up a spontaneous sort of recognition she'd had of the way it is that with people and their posturing and positioning and packaging of their responses in life. And it led to Alan bringing up the way that we're almost educated to do this, because we're educated to perform and come out as the winner, or the one who comes up with the smart answer. And this made me think of the whole situation with the world of art today, because a lot of artists are out there learning how to package something in such a way, or package what they do in such a way, that it comes off as cool, and they're winning a kind of a psychological game of King of the Mountain, a group dynamics kind of like who's the coolest guy in the room, as opposed to really being concerned of whether the package they're delivering is delivering knowledge. Anyone have a commentary on this?
Well, there's a lot of pressure, I think, especially in art schools and in cities where art students are emerging into non-student status in large numbers, pressure to come up with something original. And I think that's really the kind of the key to it all nowadays, and maybe it's a hallmark of postmodernism. Originality seems to be more important than anything else. And I think what gets lost is the actuality of originality, which is that it's not that you did something no one else ever did. It's that you put yourself into it and no one else could ever do that. So, you know, learning to paint something like Picasso is good exercise, but it's not going to lead to your art. Learning to paint something that doesn't look like any other painter is equally irrelevant to your art. And what people will like, if you ever become a great artist, is that aspect of yourself that gets into the art. And it will make it unique, but it's not unique because anybody tried to make it different from anything else.
Because maybe what's the most authentic for you as an artist is paying homage to something of the past, or some object you love, or some aspect of nature that you love, instead of coming up with something that's like original in some quirky way that it's just like someone has a wacky idea that they think, oh, everybody's going to think this is really cool. But there's no connection to life. Your connection to life really isn't in that. All of the great artists, Picasso and Cézanne, Matisse, everyone paid homage to elements in culture and other artists' work that they thought was cool, cool is the wrong word in this context, but that sparked them in some way. Picasso with African masks, and Matisse with Moroccan art and motifs, and even in his day, what they called Orientalism was very trendy, and pretty much lots of artists were trying to incorporate Oriental motifs into their work, but doing it in more of a, I'm doing this because this is the cool thing right now, rather than doing it in the way Matisse did it, which was, why does this culture see things this way, and what are they getting at, and how is their light and their culture reflected in these images and all of that? So he took that same thing that was at the time a very trendy thing and made it personal and relevant and timeless.
Yeah, it's really not so much a question of whether or not it's cool. It's a more a question of who thinks it's cool. Mm-hmm. If you do it because you think it's cool, that's cool. If you do it because you think your peer group will think it's cool, then that turns you into, you know, something of a, you know, mirror, and there's a role for that, but it doesn't go as deep as you can go into yourself. Because learning what your peer group thinks is cool is always, in a sense, a kind of superficial interpretation. And what they think is cool, in many cases, may be based on even more superficiality than that.
I heard a scientific study recently that's along these lines. They took a group of people and they put them, I think they lived in the same house or something for a week, some chunk of time. They all were going to live together, and they were all people who didn't know each other before. And what they did was randomly they chose half of these people and they said, you are going to wear red t-shirts for this whole time. The other group of people was going to wear blue t-shirts the whole time. And that's the only distinction between them, and then they just interacted normally. And within a very short period of time, the people wearing the same color t-shirts started hanging out together. And gradually, over this period of time, there was actually a kind of competitive thing that started happening with, wait, the people with the red t-shirts don't do that, you know, and why are you acting like a blue t-shirt person? There are all of these things of like peer group pressure and everything started to happen simply because they started forming these groups based on the colors of the t-shirts that they
were wearing. Did the people with red t-shirts all start to become Republicans?
I don't know, but it's just, you know, there must be something within our human nature that does create the birds of a feather flock together sort of thing spontaneously.
Although we all want to be, you know, truthful and on our game and centered in ourselves, this thing is very tricky and hard as a artist and as an actor in life. It's very hard to sort out, you know, whether you're being influenced by how you really feel or how the group is feeling. It's difficult to know, and that's as an artist, that's the path I try to chart is how to sort this out and try to say something that's truthful to me.
And well, what you said last week also shows that the part of us that wants to connect with other people on a heart level is the same part, really, that wants to belong to a group and feel like there's, you know, we're all one big family. And the way we look for our group tends to be if we like the same things and if we have the same values and, you know, we've kind of had the same past or something, and or something similar that binds us together. So that is an important part of life, and it's a very tricky thing, but a very beautiful thing when that happens in a group of people who think very differently and have a different background. You know, like cultural diversity is becoming a very important thing these days, because when you are in a room full of people who have very radically different backgrounds, economically, culturally, racially, or whatever, and you find yourself respecting each other's differences and then connecting on some deeper level, it's a very profound level of connection. But it takes a desire, takes that desire to connect, being at a much more, not just tolerant, but very receptive level for that to actually happen. So easy for us to just slip into wanting to do it in these superficial ways that are more.
Yeah, it's interesting. It sounds like in that scenario you just described that the t-shirt color overshadowed gender boundaries as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
Of
course, if they had been given a task or a context of behavior, it might have sorted out, you know, according to who was good at it and who wasn't,
exactly,
something else. but certainly people do want to group together. And it's possible that the feeling of belonging is accentuated by, promoting a rejection of someone else.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is so true. Because I have gotten in trouble so many times in a group because I stuck up for somebody they were criticizing.
Yeah.
It's my nature to do that. You know, I really hate to hear somebody who's not there being criticized, and because they can't stick up for themselves. So I always feel like I have to point out, well, you don't know, maybe they're not, whatever. And no matter how gently I stick up for that person, I'm often seen as a traitor to the group.
Yeah.
Because I'm not taking up
right.
their position.
And so this takes us back to our discussion of the last radio show of why do we say the things we say when we greet another person or get together with another person. A lot of it is that we're desperately trying to say the thing that will align us so that we don't get hit in the face, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're confirming that we're in the group. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just the people sitting at that dining room table.
Yeah, and there's like there's the level we talked about before of making a heart connection with the people, but there's also, because of this school thing of the smartest person gets the teacher's praise, there's also the part of us that wants to, we want to connect with the group on the heart level, but at the same time we want to establish ourselves at kind of the higher levels of that group. We want to be sure to impress the others in the group and not be a peon in the group. There's that part of our nature as well. Not everybody's nature. I mean, there are some marvelous people who really don't care beans about that, and it's wonderful to have somebody like that in a group of people who just is appreciating everybody and isn't trying to be impressive.
But everybody likes to be appreciated.
Everybody loves to be appreciated.
When it comes right down to it, we all like that a whole lot, and it may be the one thing that we like more than anything else is for the other side to love us.
Mm-hmm.
And for the other side of reality to hate us is probably the worst sort of experience you can have.
Exactly. And that's why, like, the children's television show, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, as kind of sappy as it was, it made the kids feel good. It's like, my kids were very creative, quirky kids, and they loved Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And if I walked into the room when it was on, I myself would get pulled into that world, because that was his main thing he did, was make everybody feel appreciated and honored.
He was a master at that. I met him one time.
You did, wow.
Yeah, we were doing software development and looking for little products that we could do. And we had done some license-based products for consumer products companies and things. And we thought perhaps Mr. Rogers, would want to license some games, some values-promoting games and activities and things. So we went to Baltimore and met him. Mm-hmm. And met with him for an hour or so, and he was very, very friendly, very pleasant, but he made a point early on in each conversation, as he got to know the two of us who were there, he asked about our families, he asked what we were doing, and he drew out of us some accomplishment, anything at all that either of us had accomplished. And then made a comment to the effect, that must have made your father very proud of you.
Hmm.
Something like that. And you'd be and you're sitting there thinking, well, yeah, suddenly you're feeling good about yourself, and you're feeling completely safe in this man's company, and it's no longer a business meeting. It's a meeting filled with people saying nice things and being kind and respectful of each other. Mm-hmm. And then, having established that atmosphere, he went on to tell us that he had decided some time back that he would never do any franchising of the program or its elements. But since he was also a flexible person. Whenever a promising alternative came up, he would consider changing his mind. And was very glad to have met us because he came very close to changing his mind.
How sweet. Well, when Mr. Rogers died, I remember hearing radio programs, many radio programs, with all these stories of, you know, various people giving stories like that of when they had met him. And they absolutely all said just what you said, the same thing. They, you know, that he tuned into pretty much everybody he met on that level of appreciation.
Yeah.
And what a great thing. Because, I mean, even it even works with total strangers when you're, I realized, I think I maybe even said this in another show one time, but a long time ago I realized that I would very often, when walking down the street and going through my daily life, have thoughts about, oh, that person looks really good today, or I really like that outfit, or, you know, something good I noticed about people, but I rarely said it out loud to the person. So I made the decision to say those things, even if I didn't know the person, to, or if it was a cashier in the store that I'd seen and, you know, she'd just gotten a new hairdo or something like that, to mention it instead of just thinking it. And every single time, without exception, that I did that, the person would like suddenly light up and go, oh, thank you.
That's
so nice of you to notice that, you know? And I mean, I never got anybody who looked at me like, well, what a weirdo, I don't know you, why are you saying that to me? Nobody reacted that way.
Right.
They really just loved the appreciation.
Right. Well, I used to have 20 or 30 people reporting to me in when I was in aerospace. And you can't, as a manager of a department, you can't, you know, be on top of what everybody's doing all the time, especially if you don't want to be micromanaging everything. But at the same time, I found that I needed to have some sort of contact with every one of those 20 or 30 people every day. And my office door was open 90% of the time, and people would come in and ask questions and so forth. But I always made a point of letting everyone know at one time, or just even for 10 seconds during the day, that I was appreciating what they were doing for me and by extension for the company. And I had been doing that for a couple of years before somebody who was visiting the office and saw me doing it asked me if I was a follower of the one-minute manager, and I didn't know what he was referring to. So I bought the book, and it's a book on how to, you know, maintain this atmosphere of mutual respect and appreciation in a business context. And he basically says, do this, spend 1 minute. I think he says 1 minute a week is sufficient. If you spend 1 minute with each person that reports to you each week, just tell them you appreciate what they're doing. That's enough to keep everybody happy. I met an engineer at Hewlett-Packard back in the days when Hewlett and Packard were there. This guy had waited for 5 years to get hired by HP. It was such a haven for engineering and creative types. And he said he'd been there for about a year, and he was working on some obscure little project in his cubby somewhere in some huge building with hundreds of people in cubbies. And one day, this elderly man wandered into his cubby and was very nice and friendly, and, you know, seemed to know him by name and seemed to know something about what he was working on, and told him that, you know, he thought it was really great that he was there working on that project. And he said it wasn't until the guy was walking out of his cubby that he realized it was Dave Packard. And his loyalty and, you know, satisfaction, job satisfaction, went through the roof and stayed there. He said if that happened to him once every 5 years, it would have been enough.
That's, my father did that. He was became CEO of JCPenney Company when he was 50 years old, and one of his first decisions was that in that first year that he was in that position, he and my mom were going to visit every single JCPenney store in the entire country and personally meet the manager. And they did. They, you know, he couldn't do it all at once on one big tour because he had obligations in New York, but they just kept scheduling these trips. And my mom would meet with the wives of the managers, and he would meet with the managers. And after that year, everybody throughout the country felt like they were personal friends with my mom and dad. And I myself, when I was traveling around the country, if I went into a JCPenney store and introduced myself, the first thing they would say is, "I met your mom and dad. You know, we had them over for dinner at our house." And it was a real family feeling that was generated from doing that.
Yeah, it's a kind of giving, and it's surprising how far just a little bit of it actually goes.
Well, I feel that we're actually approaching the heart. How many minutes we got here?
30 seconds.
Oh boy, this is the next show, I think. Where is the
Oh, sorry,
substantial?
A minute and 30 seconds.
Maybe we can just
so spread out.
I mean, what are you going to say after you say this? I think the ultimate content of life, that's the only really substantial thing we have, is love. Mm-hmm. And I think that anytime art expresses this and gets it across, and we can connect around art with that content being delivered, that's really what it's all about. But I think that's basically what life's all about, and that there isn't a thing called the opposite. It's just the lack of love creates the opposite and creates a lot of the problems that we have.
So don't forget to visit iconart.org. That's icon-art.org. And click on the link for the Icon Art Radio archives, where you can listen to every one of the now 63 programs that we've recorded for your enjoyment.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.